Okay, so good afternoon, everybody. And as I just mentioned, welcome to a shiur, which is a little bit of recycling, although in a slightly different form of material from when we learned Ruas in the Tuesday afternoon shiur. And on this sheet at the top, right below the title, I gave a link for anyone who's interested in the collection of shiurim on the Book of Ruth. Now, I'm going to go back and forth between Ruth and Rus, you know, consistently, and Root as well. The only thing consistent will be the inconsistency of the way I pronounce the name. So all of them refer to the same person. I'm assuming, you know, familiarity with the basic story of the book, or at least of chapter one. I did give you an outline on the sheet of chapter one. There was a famine in Israel. A family moves from Israel to Moab. There's a lot to say about Moab, some of which we may get to actually a little bit later. But they move from Beit Lechem to Moab. It is a family of a husband and wife, Elimelech and Naomi. They have two sons, Mahlon and Kilion. Mahlon and Kilion get married while in Moab to Moabite women. It is unclear whether those women convert to Judaism before getting married or not, and that's something that I discussed in the classes that are in that link at the top of the page. But the two men, Mahlon and Kilion, die, as does Elimelech. So they lose those three men. However, they've gained two women, Ruth and Orpah. So Naomi wants to go back to Beit Lechem, back to Israel. The famine is over. Naomi tries to convince Ruth and Orpah not to come with her. She succeeds in getting Orpah to part ways with her, but Ruth insists on staying with Naomi, and Naomi and Ruth return to Beit Lechem, right? That's the basic narrative of the story, and it's what we're really going to focus on today. The background noise is because we're at the end of lunch here in the school, and hopefully they will all be in classrooms soon, and then we will be able to focus a little bit better. By the way, for more aspects of this story, feel free to come to my other Shavuos Shiurim. I'm going to be speaking on different aspects of the story throughout Shavuos night in different venues, and also at B'nai Torah, actually, on the second afternoon of Shavuos. I'll be talking there about Ruth and the Eshes Chayil, which for those in my Mishlei class, we talked about not that long ago. In any case, I want to look at a decision made by a woman in this first chapter, but not the decision that we usually focus on. Which decision in that story in Perek Aleph, in the first chapter, is the decision we normally focus on? Well,
the fact that Ruth wants to stay with her mother.
Right, Ruth's decision to stay with Naomi, right? That is, I mean, understandably, amazing. First of all, it's amazing because Ruth does this independently. And what I mean when I say independently is the fact that we have other people in the Torah who make the journey to the land of Israel. But it tends to be at God's summons, right? People compare Ruth to Avraham in that she's coming to the land of Israel. But with Avraham, Hashem told him to go and gave him a promise that he would bless him. Ruth is much more daring than Avraham. People could compare her to Rivka. Rivka goes from Aram to the land of Israel, like Avraham did actually. But Rivka is also chosen to go, right? The servant of Avraham says, I asked God to find the right woman, and God told me it's going to be the woman who... I made a deal with God. The woman who says X is the one. And lo and behold, you said it. Clearly, you are the one who are supposed to marry Yitzchak. And Rivka says, I'm going to go. But again, there's an element of divine choice in the selection of Rivka to go. And the Jews go after they get out of Egypt. But once again, it's Hashem demanding that they go. Ruth amazes us because she does it herself. I brought you a quote here in source number 2. I love this quote. from Professor Phyllis Tribble. I don't know if that's properly pronouncing it. Maybe it's tribal. I don't know. An article that she published in 1976, Two Women in a Man's World, a Reading of the Book of Ruth. A man's world tells a woman's story. With consummate artistry, the Book of Ruth presents the aged Naomi and the youthful Ruth as they struggle for survival in a patriarchal environment. These women bear their own burdens. They know hardship, danger, insecurity, and death. No God promises them blessing, right? God doesn't say to them, go to my land and I'll give you blessing like he does with Abraham. No man rushes to their rescue. You can argue that Rivka at least has Yitzchak. They themselves risk bold decisions and shocking acts to work out their own salvation in the midst of the alien, the hostile, and the unknown. One female has chosen another female in a world whose life depends on men. There is no more radical decision in all the memories of Israel. What a fascinating description. Entirely not what ever came to mind for me when reading the Book of Ruth until I read it. So I thought that was very interesting. So Ruth amazes us because she makes the decision on her own. That's number one. Number two, Ruth amazes us because why does she do this? What is it that Ruth is trying to accomplish by going? And yes, we talk about her becoming a Jew, but what else is on her agenda? Doesn't sound like it. Does not get it all. Taking care of Naomi. Exactly. Claudette says it. A Ruth herself. We've got an Aviva Ruth. So Claudette says it's helping Naomi. We know that gleaning was a potentially dangerous activity. Right? I gave you references in source number 3. I'd asked in the email for people to make sure to have a Book of Ruth with them. So take a look at chapter 2, sentence 9. Chapter 2 is the one where Ruth goes out and gleans in the fields. So Boaz encounters Ruth, and he says to Ruth, "Einayich basadeh asher yiktzorun." Your eyes should be on the field where you are harvesting. They are harvesting, not you. V'halacht achareihen. You go behind the harvesters. Halotzi v'si'es hane'arim levelti nog eich. I have instructed the youths not to touch you, not to give you a hard time. Isn't it remarkable that he needs to give that instruction? Right? This is not a simple place to be hanging out. Jump ahead to sentence 15. In sentence 15, we're told, Vatakam lelakeit, she got up to glean. Vayitzav Boaz as ne'arav lemor, Boaz instructed his youth, saying, Gam bein ha'omorim telakeit, I want her to be able to glean among the sheaves themselves. Velo sachli muha, and don't shame her. And then the next sentence, Vegam shol tashol lamanat zvasim vazavtem v'likta, I want you to leave stuff for her on purpose. Velo sigaru ba, and don't rebuke her. Right? Don't yell at her. It's a strong word, tigaru. It's really it's a yelling. There's a risk here that Boaz, as the head of the field, is very aware of. Not only that, jump ahead to sentence 22, towards the end of the chapter. Ruth comes back home to Naomi and shows her what she brought back. And Naomi says to her, wow, that's amazing. Well, first, actually, Naomi asks her, where were you? And she says it was with Boaz. And Naomi is amazed because, hey, Boaz is our relative. And Naomi then says to Ruth in sentence 22, Tov biti ki seitziim na'arosav. It'll be good if you go out with the maidens of Boaz, v'lo yifki uvach b'sadeh acher. So they won't, again, yifki uvach, hurt you in another field. Right? It's interesting to note that she doesn't say anything in the first place about, hey, why don't you go to Boaz's field? He's a relative. In the same way that in chapter 1, she doesn't say, you know, you could possibly marry my relative, Boaz. right? Boaz is not mentioned. So those who learned Ruth with me will remember, sorry Rick, you gotta wait a minute. Those who learned Ruth with me will remember that the answer is Boaz is not necessarily, in the beginning, the person he becomes during the story. There's an evolution potentially for Boaz described in the Medrash, which may fit and explain that. We're not going to go into it now. It will be my class, though, at midnight on Shavuos night at Aish Thornhill. Ricky and then Claudette.
Do we know why Boaz protects her in particular and not say to the boys, do not touch any of the women?
Yes. So we talked about it when I gave the class on Ruth as a whole, on the book of Ruth as a whole. Boaz seems to have an ongoing campaign to discipline the people who are working in his field. It's not only about Ruth. They read it into things like the fact that he invokes Hashem's name in greeting them, which, as the Gemara points out, is unusual. Boaz, in general, is dealing with the type of people who tend to get field work, who tend not necessarily to be among the most sophisticated. These are young people. They're described as ne'arim. They're doing hard labor out in the sun. And Boaz has a campaign for disciplining them overall. And that's the read that I have of the story. Claudette.
Maybe Naomi was feeling a bit ashamed of what happened to her family, so she wasn't going to be pushing it Ruth to go to the relative or anything like that.
Right.
She was willing to take whatever comes.
Right, and that's entirely possible. We know that when she comes back to town and people say, wow, is that Naomi? And she says, call me Mara, bitter. I have been made bitter by God. So there could be an element of it. It could also be a sense that she has no right to claim the support. You know, her family abandoned everybody else when they were in need. By what right does she come back to them and say, help me out?
Right.
So that's another possibility. Another element which demonstrates the threat that is involved. Take a look at source number 4 from the Malbim. Malbim is commenting on the beginning of the chapter when Ruth says, I'm going to go glean. Va'amra, she said, Va'alakta b'shibolim, I will gather among the sheaves. Yotzelamar, meaning, Shalotikach rak leket, she'en ha'aniyem makpidim al zeh. There are 3 standard types of gleaning. One is called leket, one is called shichacha, and one is called peah. Right? What is peah?
The corner.
The corner, right? Just like we use the term, peot. Right? Peah is the corner. Peah is supposed to be the corner of the field, is supposed to be left for the needy. Where exactly? How much? Not our discussion right now. Then there's something called shichacha. Like lishkoach. Shechacha means?
It's forgotten.
I'm sorry?
Forgotten.
Right. Shechacha means the grain that they forgot to cut. They're going through the field and they missed something. And then there is leket. And leket is stuff that got dropped. The gleaning that got dropped and then they pick it up. So what we're told here, Malbim says, when she uses the verb va'alakta, it means she's only getting leket specifically. She'ein ha'aniyim makpidim al zeh. Because the paupers are not as demanding regarding that. They don't fight for it as much. She'yesh sados harbe b'chol achad melaket basadeh miyuchad. Because there are a lot of fields and each pauper goes to a different field. Ma'she'ein kein peah, she'kol achad choteif mechaveiro. But not peah. Peah, each one grabbed it from the other. What do you mean? Where is Malbim getting this from? Shadinhu, im tzadites orim lachalek ve'echad omer lavuz, shomim lamisha omer lavuz. He quotes to a Mishnah. If the owner says, I am willing to give out the grain from the peah, I'm willing to just take care of this myself. I'll distribute it to all the people here. If one of the paupers who's present says no, I want to have the opportunity to compete for it. The rule indeed is the owner is not able to do it. It has to be left for them to compete for it. And so the result of that, as he continues to say, is the imkein yavozu ha'aniyim bizroa kocham. They take it by force. The imtirza lavuz yifku ba mare nefesh. And if she decides she's going to try to take by force, you know, there are some desperate people out there who are going to attack her. V'gam b'haleket amra, achar Hashem tzachin be'enav. Also, regarding the leket she's going to take, the stuff that was dropped, she said, I'm going to go after a gleaner in whose, a harvester, in whose eyes I find favor. She'im er'eh b'al ha'sadeh mabit alai b'ayin ra'a lo alakeit sham. If I see that the owner of the field doesn't seem friendly, I'm going to go to a different field, she says to Naomi. Ad she'er'eh she'matzasi chein, until I find that I have found favor, v'shalo yagia li bizayon me'akotzuyem o yeser ha'aniyim, and that I won't be shamed and I won't be mocked by the rest of the needy people. And to show you how great a concern this was, take a look at source number 5. This is a Mishnah in Peah. Of course, the Mishnah is not from the time of Megillas Rus. The Mishnah is later than that. But the law that it presents tells us what kind of field, what kind of things went on in the fields. It's gun control. Peah ein kotsrin osa b'magalos. Ve'ein okrin osa b'kardumos. You're not allowed to use scythes. You're not allowed to use sickles when you are getting the grain. Kadesha lo yaku ishes re'ehu, lest they strike each other. Now, you could suggest potentially that this isn't about intentionally harming, it's about an accident. You know, you're wielding a sickle, and maybe somebody gets hurt. However, the way it's classically read is that this was about, you know, there's a fight. You're out there in the hot sun, somebody grabs something before you, it gets into, you get into dangerous situations. So what Ruth is doing here is amazing. First of all, because she's making the journey on her own. God doesn't summon her, unlike others. And second, because she's doing this, at least in part, as a way of taking care of Naomi, as a remarkable act of kindness. Naomi couldn't have managed this herself. Naomi's much older than Ruth. If you take a look at source number 6, Dr. Yael Ziegler points out, and we've talked about this in the Shmuel Shir, that having Ruth as an ancestress is what makes David eligible to become king. She says the goal of the book is to say, look, David comes from great lineage, and specifically, aside from the question of legitimacy and Boaz as his ancestor and all of that, to say he comes from the kind of behavior that will make him eligible to be king. That's what he has. That's the stock he comes from. So that's what I meant when I said, you know, 10, 15 minutes ago, we normally focus on the decision of Ruth. But that's not where I want to go. I want to talk about Naomi's decision. Naomi saying, when Ruth and Orpah say, we want to go with you, she says, no, don't go with me. I don't have any kids for you. You don't know anybody. Like, what? You're supposed to say yes, right? You're not supposed to say no. You have people who are offering probably to save your life. Why in the world does Naomi discourage Orpah and Ruth from going with her? What would you say?
When I was little, my mother said, if somebody offers me cookies, you have to say no twice, and only the third time you're allowed to take one. So maybe she was just being polite. She realized what a big sacrifice it is.
Right. I think your mother probably got that from source number, I'll tell you which one. I think it's on here. Yeah, from source number 15. I think that's where she got it. You'll see. Carla.
I was wondering why it says when she refuses both of them for the first time, that they should go back to their mother's house and not their father's.
Right. So I have that, I think, in my notes from when I gave when I talked about the book as a whole. I don't remember it right now. I believe that if you catch the recording from that session, I think I did talk about that there, but I don't remember offhand. The note in the chat, I see, I'm going to refer you also to source number 15, the one that I pointed out to Ricky. Yes, Nanette.
I'm wondering if the her telling her daughter-in-laws not to join them is the kernel about conversion generally, that, you know, to reject the potential convert. Is that the kernel?
That's what Leah wrote about in the chat, and that was what I was referring to in source number 15. We're going to get to that idea. that it's about... That's fine. No, that's a legitimate answer. I mean, there are a lot of answers that you could give, including... She's not serious in rejecting them, although she sort of seems like it. You know, it's sort of like someone makes you an offer, so like Ricky was saying, it's not nice to jump on it. Maybe, but she's pretty serious, it seems. Yeah, Janine.
Well, just also that they are Moabite women. There's something unsavory about them.
So that's point, right.
You're
so,
not supposed to marry in.
Right. So that's one of the elements we're going to take a look at, is the possibility that, in fact, it's because they are Moabite in a few different ways. We'll see. Linda.
Oh, that's what I was saying.
That's what you're going to say also.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's look at, first of all, let's look at the basic story a little more closely. And once we've looked at the story a little more closely, we're gonna see how to deal with this. So I brought it for you in source number 7 on the sheet from the JPS translation, just because when I first discussed this in a group, I had it on the sheet, so I figured, hey, why take it out? But you have a Book of Ruth, so you could see it in the original Hebrew as well. So we're looking at Perek Aleph, chapter 1, Pasuk Vav, sentence 6. Vatakam hi vechaloseh vatashav misedei Moav. Naomi got up with her two daughters-in-law, and she returned from the fields of Moab, Kishama'a b'stei Moab, Kifakad Hashem es Amo, Laseis Lehem Lachem, because she heard that God had recalled his nation to give them bread. Fine. Vateitzei min ha-makom asher ha-yisa shama u'shtei chaloseha ima. She left the place she had been in. She has her two daughters-in-law with her. Vateilachna v'aderech l'shuv al-eretz Yehuda. And they're walking on the road to go back to Yehuda. And then she says to the two daughters-in-law, Lechna shovna isha lebeis ima. I want you to go back, each of you to go back, lebeis ima. As Carla pointed out, she says, go back to the house of your mother. That's the interesting thing that it says, house of your mother and not house of your father. I will tell you, Carla, just because I have it open in front of me, that the Dant Mikra edition, don't remember who's the editor of this one, but I will take a look while we're talking. Feivel Meltzer is the editor. He suggests that it's because it would be the way of a single woman to live with her mother as opposed to living with her father. Now, that assumes that they're living separately, but that's the wording anyway. That's the answer that Feivel Meltzer offers. So,
however, if I may, yeah. That is not what happens with Tamar, who is sent back, also as a childless widow.
Yeah.
Judah sends her back to her father's house.
Yeah, no, and he actually makes that point. There are a few different references you could look at, that definitely being one of them. Correct. So, Naomi says to them, I want you to go back to the house of your mother. Yas Hashem imachem chesed kasher asisem im hameisim ve'imadi. I actually think I even remember a medrash that says on base ima that it was like Uma, her nation, as opposed to her mother. But in any case, may God perform chesed for you as you have done with the dead and with me. There's a lot to be said about that line, but again, this is just to go through the story. Yidein Hashem lachem umtzena menucha isha beis isha. I want, she says, that God should give you rest, each of you, with a husband. Vatishak lahen, she kisses them. Vatisena kolan vatifkena, and they raise their voices in tears. They cry. Vatomar na laki itach na shuv le'ameich. They say, no, we're coming with you back to your nation. Vatomar nami shovna v'nosai. She says, no, go back, my daughters. Lama selach na'imi. Why would you come with me? Ha'oli vanim v'me'av ayu lachem la'anashim. Do I have any more sons in me that I would be able to have you marry them? We're in sentence 12. Shovna v'nosai lechna. She says, go back, my daughters. Go. Ki zakanti mihios le'ish. I am too old at this point to get married. Ki amarti yeshli sikva, even if I said I have hope. Gama yisi halayla le'ish, even if I conceived tonight. V'gam yoladati vanim, and I gave birth to sons, twins. Halahein tisaberna ad asher yigdalu. Are you really going to wait until they grow up? Halahein te agena levelti heyos le'ish. Will you be agunot? Will you be chained? Will you be stuck, anchored, to be without a man? Al benosai, don't do this, my daughters. Ki marli meod mikem ki yatza v'yad Hashem. She says, I can't have you do this. It's even worse for me than for you. God's hand has come out against me. Don't do it. And so, batisena kolon batifkena, they raise their voices and they cry. They cry further. Batishak or palacham osav rustav kabach. Orpah kisses her mother-in-law, meaning kisses her and leaves. And Ruth cleaves to her. Vatomer, and she says, Naomi says, Hine shava yivim techalama ve'al Eloheha. Look, your sister-in-law, she went back to her nation and her God. Note that, and her God. Shuvi achra yivim tech, go follow your sister-in-law. Vatomer rus al tifki yivila zvech lashuv me'acharayach, and Ruth gives her famous speech, don't push me to leave you. Kilasher telchi eleich, where you go, I will go. Ubasher talini yalin, where you lie down, I will lie down. Amech ami, your nation is my nation. Velokayach elokai, your God is my God. Basher tamusi amus v'shamek haver, where you die, I will die, and that's where I'll be buried. Ko yasa Hashem li v'cho yosif, she swears by God. Kiamaves yafrid v'ni uv'neich, death will separate between me and you. And Naomi says, all right, fine. And she stops trying to talk her out of it. When we learned this in the Tuesday afternoon shiur, Joyce Eklav suggested that Naomi rejects Ruth and Orpah as a practical point. She doesn't want the responsibility. Like, why should I be responsible for the fact that they're ruining their lives by coming with me? Which I think is a great answer. I'm going to give some other ones, but I'm noting that as well. Yes, Claudette.
What's interesting is that Naomi told them to go back to their God, and Ruth responded with, your God is my God.
Yep, very much so. That is one of the points behind reading this as a statement of accepting God and accepting Judaism, is that contrast. Absolutely. So I'm going to suggest three approaches. The first approach is not a nice approach. It's Dr. Yael Ziegler's approach. I have to say, I'm very uncomfortable with it, but it's interesting. She suggests that Naomi blames Orpah and Ruth for her problems. She makes this point in an essay called Al Chamot Vekalot, on mothers-in-law and daughters-in-law. And she says, maybe Ruth and Orpah are responsible for the death of Mahlon and Kilion. You know, I want to go back to a sentence that I read very quickly, and you could read it differently than the way I read it. Take a look at Pasuk Yud Gimel, sentence 13. Yep, exactly. When she says, when Naomi says, Al binosai, don't do this, my daughters, ki mar li me'od mikem, you could read that as, it is bitter to me because of you. You did this to me. Take a look at source number 8. The Zohar Chadash has this. The Zohar Chadash is not like modern Zohar. When they printed the Zohar initially, they didn't print all the manuscripts. The early printings of the Zohar are incomplete. And then there was a reprint that included the other manuscripts, and that becomes called Zohar Chadash. But Zohar Chadash and Zohar Yashan are the same thing. So, Ki tsar li me'od mikem, the text says tsar instead of mar, but it's talking about mar. That's why I put the seek in my English translation. It says it's very painful. It means bitter. Aleichem mi boyelei. It should say, not I am in pain mikem, from you. It should say I'm in pain about you. Not unlike what Joyce suggested. Kemoda, amar tsar li alecha. Like when David talks about the loss of Shaul and Yonasan, and he says, I'm in pain about you. My mikem, what does it mean when he says I am in pain or bitter from you? What does it mean when Naomi says that? Amar of Kerunya, Amar of Bizna. Aka beliboy mikem. De'atun garamtun lebonai diamusu. There is pain in my heart from you. You caused my sons to die. Kaman de misraim me'achra. Like one person complaining about another. That's one point. Is Ruth, Naomi doesn't want Ruth there. Because it's just, look what you did to me. You destroyed my family. That's number one. Number two, there's a potential element of embarrassment. You know, I think I said this when I gave this in the Ruth shiur. You know, what goes on in Moab stays in Moab. It's one thing if her sons married Moabite women in Moab and she never needed anybody back home to know. Now she's going to come home with this Moabite daughter-in-law. Take a look at number 9. The Medrash in Ruth Zuta says it. Mipnei ma haisa machzeres osan. Why did she do that? Why did she say, no, go back? Kedei shelo tisbayesh mehen. So that she wouldn't be embarrassed by them. So, as uncomfortable as I am with this idea, it is anchored in, you know, some pretty old sources. So Dr. Ziegler in source number 10 says not only that, but you can see it in the way she responds to Ruth's big famous speech. Tell me something. Ruth gives this whole dramatic push. Your nation is my nation. Where you go, I will go. I'll be buried there. She swears by God. What does Naomi say to her back in response?
Nothing.
Nothing. So take a look at Dr. Ziegler in number 10. Ha'efsharut ki Naomi be'emes u'betamim lo ratzta shechaloseh yashuvu ima. The possibility that, in fact, Ruth really didn't want them to come back with her. She wasn't just, you know, playing the game of no, 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 meaning yes, yes. No, she really didn't want them to come back. Nitmechet al yidei teguvata shel Naomi la'hatzarat ha'ne'emanut shel Ruth. It is supported by her response to the declaration of loyalty that Ruth offered. Mimena ola ki hiti sharem chamota b'chol mechir, in which Ruth made it clear, I'm staying at any price. Naomi lo mechabeket et Ruth. Naomi does not hug Ruth. Ve'hilo matzia milim shel chesed o shel tmicha. She doesn't say anything to her to support her and be kind to her and all that. Lemaaseh hi noseres domemes l'or hatzaras ha'ne'emanus hadramatit shel Ruth. I can't read these lines in Ashkenaz or Sephard. I go back and forth. But she's silent in the face of this very dramatic declaration of loyalty. Hapasuk mitzayin, the text says, Vatechdal ledaber eleha. She ceased speaking to her. Hashoresh chadal matzbia al peula mechuvenet mitzida shel Naomi hafsaka shel hatikshoret. Vatechdal is not just failure to speak, but a decision not to speak. I am not saying anything. That's the way that she reads it. I find it a very interesting read. And her point about chadal is fair, right? When the Jews say to Moshe, when things are getting worse in Egypt, they say, chadal mimenu v'navda es Mitzrayim, leave us alone, and we will just serve Egypt. So it's that kind of a use. She also sees it, by the way, in chapter 2. In the beginning of chapter 2, Ruth says, I'm going to go glean, right? Which is this dangerous and arduous thing to do. And what does Naomi say to her? Go ahead. Lechibiti. Yeah, go ahead. Nothing about like, whoa, I can't believe you're doing this. I still find it difficult. I hear what she's saying, and I see the evidence, but why is this a difficult answer to give? Look at the text.
It's also very cold.
Yeah.
It's like an aunt Carrie. They've been together for how many years?
Well, if she blames her for the death of her son, I could understand her being uncaring, like, go away, why are you here? You know, I could definitely see that. Ricky?
Saying that this book was written much, much later, and it was sort of filling in the facts. So this is maybe the way it is written. Naomi's character is written is to make Ruth all that much more.
Oh, that's an interesting suggestion. Shmuel is the one who writes Ruth, and indeed he's writing it later than the moment of the story. So you're suggesting that Shmuel, in order to elevate Ruth in our eyes, is going to make Naomi less than sympathetic. It's a very interesting idea, but here's my problem. I think he does make Naomi sympathetic, and I think he makes Naomi sympathetic, not just sympathetic to the reader, but sympathetic to Ruth. She hugs and kisses and cries when Orpah leaps. Look at that display of emotion. She calls Ruth, BT, my daughter. She tells her to go to Boaz's field for safety. Like, it's not so easy to take this view seriously, even though I see the Medrash that she quotes, I see the Zohar Chadash, and I see the Chadal, and I see the point about the non-reaction. I don't have a better explanation for the non-reaction to Ruth's dramatic speech. But I'm not sold. Which is okay, because I have two more answers. Yeah, Ruth. Maybe. Entirely possible. It's a fair idea. Carla and then Chana.
I believe it's a Targum Ruth or Midrash Ruth or both, where they put it into the conversion scheme where...
Yeah, we're going to talk about that.
Discourage her.
Right. No, we're going to get there. I keep pointing people to source 15. We will get to 15. We're already up to number 11. Chana.
For this discussion, the last discussion that they had, I didn't find a source that actually Orpah didn't convert and Ruth did, because when Naomi says she went back to her God, and she says, my God is your God. So maybe it's a hint that one of them converted, one didn't.
I mean, we know that Orpah doesn't convert.
Yeah, but initially the Ruth was converted already, because she says he will be. Your Hashem will be my Hashem. He is already.
Oh, that's an interesting idea. That's interesting. I see what you're suggesting. I hadn't thought about reading it that way. I mean, like I said in the beginning of the class, there are those who argue that Ruth and Orpah had converted from the beginning of the story, before they married Mahlon and Kilion. The Gemara clearly doesn't think so, because the Gemara reads Ruth's speech here as the basic text for conversion. You know, so the Gemara clearly doesn't believe that. The Gemara thinks that they married Mahlon and Kilion when they were still, you know, non-Jewish. Susan and then Linda. Right, there is such an idea. I don't really understand it, but there is such an idea. Okay, I see hands. Susan, Linda, Carla, and then Ruth. Yes,
okay.
Susan.
Two things. One, even Ezra says that they both converted.
Yeah.
From the line to her people answer her.
Yeah, Ibn Ezra is of the belief that they had converted originally.
Yes.
Ibn Ezra thinks that they were Jewish from the start.
To what Carla said about why she said go back to your mother's house and not your father's house, another explanation I had in here was that you look at me like a mother. Well, I can't be your mother anymore. Go back to your own mother who will behave that way to you, and that's why mother, not father.
Got it. Interesting.
I'm not going to be your mother.
Okay, thank you. Linda.
I think maybe she didn't respond to her, that Naomi didn't respond to her. You know how when somebody does something really nice for you, and you say, thank you, thank you, thank you, and it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing for the person who's done the good thing, because they did it out of the goodness of their heart. So maybe Naomi just didn't want to embarrass her.
Mm-hmm.
She accepted what Ruth said.
Could be. It's possible. I would have liked to have seen something, but I hear you. Carla.
There's also a source, I forget whether it's the Midrash or the Targum, where Mahlon and Chilion get blamed for not converting their wives, and that is the reason they died.
Oh, absolutely. No, I mean, that's what you're seeing in number 8. In Naomi making exactly that accusation. No, you absolutely have that. and taking then the view that there was no conversion at that stage. Absolutely exists. Yes, Ruth.
No, I was going to say, if they were in Moab, I mean, how could they formally convert? I mean, maybe...
Right, so the question of... Right. Right. The question of what, you know, who was on the Beis Din if they converted to Judaism is a very good one, and another point in favor of saying that there had been no conversion initially. Correct. No, I understand what you're saying. And there's more to be said about the technicalities of conversion and what the possibilities would have been, but I'm not going there right now. So this is all under the first approach. Naomi blames Orpah and Ruth for her problems and doesn't want them joining her. Second approach, Naomi is concerned for their physical welfare. She fears what I call anti-Gentilism, right? If there's an anti-Semitism, so she fears anti-Gentilism and anti-Moabism. Remember, Moab and the Jews don't get along, right? Where does Moab come from in the first place?
Lot.
Lot and Sodom. Right? That's the origin of Moab, is the daughters of Lot with Lot. There's never been, you know, Lot parts ways from Abraham, and there is no reunion thereafter. We know that the Jews are on their way into the land of Israel, and Moab is very scared, even though we were not going to fight with them, because their family, we're told, don't start a war with them. Nonetheless, they went and they hired Bilam to curse us. They did not want to share their resources with us. That's number one. And then number two, well, take a look. You don't need me to tell it to you. Take a look at source number 11. Sefer Devarim. Ammonite and Moabite shall not enter the congregation of God. Even the tenth generation of theirs shall not enter the congregation of God ever, for they did not greet you with bread and water when you were leaving Egypt. They wouldn't give you food on your way into Israel. Doesn't mean literally when you were leaving Egypt originally. They weren't near Moab at that point. It means when we were trying to enter Israel. And instead, they hired Bilam, the son of Beor, against you. Their concern was selfish for themselves. And in fact, there would be further wars with Moab later in our history. In the time of King Ahab, Moab would fight a war against us. You may remember, we've talked about it on occasion, the Mesha Stili. Right? The Mesha Stili is a very, very, very old, or was, a very, very, very old stone tablet that recorded the Moabite version of their war with the Hebrews, with us, corresponding to events that occurred in Sefer Melachim. So the possibility is, and this is Malbim's approach, that Naomi thinks to herself, they're not gonna survive in Israel. I see your hand, Claudette, but I'm going through this idea first. They're not going to survive in Israel. If you go back to sentence 8 in chapter 1, right? They are already leaving the land of Moab in sentence 6. However, it's only in sentence 8 that she says to them, I want you to go back. So Malvin says she thought they're just accompanying her to the border, and then they're going to leave. So she says to them at that point, you know, you've done enough chesed for me, it's time for you to go home. However, they keep on going. If you go to sentence 10, right, sentence 10, sentence 11, they say, no, we want to go back with you to your nation. And she says, no, I don't have anybody for you to marry. So take a look at source number 12 at what Malbim says. Gilu daitan she'ein holchin italu lavosa ad eretz Yehuda v'lashuv misham la'eretz Moav. They demonstrated that they weren't planning on just escorting her up to Judea and then going back to Moav. Ki itach nashuv li'ameich. They said, we want to go with you to your nation. We intend to remain among your people. She had not yet said, go back to your God, meaning to convert, That sentence doesn't make any sense the way that we just read it. It's, there's a typo in the Malbim. It isn't lo amra, it's lo amru. They had not yet said that they want to go to your God to convert. They had not said that they wanted to convert. They only said, we want to go to your nation. Ki itachna shuv la'amech. We're going to go with you to your nation. That was what they were suggesting. And her response was, this is a bad idea. And then the story continues, right? And in sentence 15, Naomi says to Ruth, Orpah went back to her gods, assuming that Ruth would want to use the same, would want to do the same. And she uses that as the argument. So the idea in this approach of Malbim is Naomi had everything to gain if they would join her and help her, but she put their needs first. And when she saw that Ruth wanted to convert, she said pushing her away would not be merciful. Because if I did that, if I push her away, she's going to have to remain a Moabite. She won't be able to become a Jew. And that's not what she wants. She wants to be a Jew. And therefore she accepts her. And this offers us a different read of that problematic phrase, Marli Me'od Mikem. Right? We've now given two different ways to read it. Either, it is worse for me than for you, was our original read. Our second read, it is bitter for me because of you. This is another way to read it. Take a look at the Medrash and Rus Rabbah in Source 13. Marli Me'od Mikem Bishvilchem. It is bitter for me for your sake. The hand of God came out against me, my sons, my husband. I would be miserable, even more miserable, for your sake, if now you suffered as well. That's the idea. That's Malbim's approach, is that this is about not having them suffer in order to help her. Claudette.
I can see the point where Naomi is concerned about the reaction of the community towards the Moabite women, because they've only got to go to the Redeemer. He only said he didn't want it when he heard he got to marry the Moabite woman. So he already don't want to be anything to do with the Moabite woman.
Sorry, say that again, that last point. She already...
I mean, you only have to look at the first Redeemer that was supposed to redeem.
Yeah, Ploni Amoni.
He said he was going to redeem when he heard about the land, but then when he heard about the Moabite woman that he has to take in, he said no. So Naomi's concern is that maybe the community is going to resent the Moabite woman.
Right. So, and that's, when we did this in the series, in the Tuesday series, we talked a lot about why Ploni Amoni backed out. And that is indeed, as various Midrashim read it, his motivation is the Moabite aspect of it. It's true. I want to go to the third approach. I'm a little concerned about time, so I'm moving to the third approach. The third approach is Naomi is concerned about religious welfare. Both their religious welfare and the welfare of the Jewish nation in the event that they're not actually sincere. Take a look at source number 14. Part of the instructions for dealing with conversion to Judaism. Ve'ein marbim alav, ve'ein medaktikim alav. When someone comes to you to convert to Judaism and they've already demonstrated sincerity, we do not increase things upon them. We do not, I wrote in my translation, we're not precise with them. Am Rabbi Elazar, Mikra. Rabbi Elazar says, how do I know that? Dichsiv, because the look lab with Naomi. Vatera kimis ametzes hilalachas ita. She saw that Ruth was persisting. Vatechdal edaber elah, and she stopped speaking to her, meaning she stopped trying to discourage her. What she was trying to do was to determine that they were sincere. That's the idea. And then you get some later sources who indeed say, source 15, the Medrash in Ruth Rabbah, Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmeni said, "B'shem Rabbi Yudin Rabbi Chanina, b'shalosh mekomos k'siv kan shovna shovna shovna." It says, "Go back three times." Kineged gimel pa'ayim shadochen es hager. parallel to the three times you push away someone who converts. V'mitriach yoser mikan. Mekablen oso. If he keeps on pushing, you accept him. After the third time, that's already sufficient. I will note for you, because it's so popular, right, like four different people in this, you know, shiur, mentioned versions of this. This doesn't appear in the Gemara. Like, don't assume that this is a Talmudic thing. And in fact, you don't find three rejections of conversion in the text. The speech here is not about conversion originally. Yes, she says go back, but the conversation is not a conversion conversation in the beginning. It only becomes a conversion conversation at some point in the dialogue. Where within the dialogue does this become a conversion conversation? At what point do you see this as a conversion conversation?
And Ruth said about God when she accepted.
So, where in the text?
When she said, your God would be my God.
So that's Malbim. Malbim says when she said she wanted to convert. Rashi puts it earlier. Rashi puts it in sentence 10. When she said, Ki itach nashuv la'amech. We will go back with you to your nation. That already was a statement of wanting to convert. It's reminiscent of the idea of Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, that conversion is about accepting the nation, not only about accepting the religion. In any case, the concern that Naomi has is that they're not really sincere, and therefore you're not really helping them by having them convert. And that's a concern that remains in our own day. I brought you a couple of fascinating sources on this issue. I could have brought more. Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, who was one of the great halachic authorities in Israel in the latter half of the 20th century, he said that judges who accept someone to convert to Judaism, when the person has no intention, clearly has no intention of keeping mitzvos, they're violating lifnei iver lo sitein mechshol. You're putting a stumbling block in front of the blind. Take a look at source number 16. He says, it appears in my humble opinion that anyone who helps with such a conversion, even if they mistakenly believe that these are full converts, that it's valid, even according to that view, even if you'll tell me that such a conversion actually is valid. So now you've created a Jew who is liable for all those times they don't fulfill mitzvos. How have you helped them? Right before, they had no such obligation. Now they have all these obligations that they're not keeping. Rav Shlomo Zalman says, that's lifnei iver. You are causing them to stumble. Rav Kook, before Rav Shlomo Zalman, actually painted it a little more harshly. He said in number 17, "V'lo od ela shehamekablim osam harehim overim al lifnei iver memanavshach." He says anyone who accepts such a person to convert is actually violating lifnei iver, whichever way you read it. Meaning, de'im nomar she'en gerusim gerus gam b'di'evet. If you'll tell me the conversion is invalid even b'di'evet, ex post facto, after the fact, it's no good. Then you are causing the community to stumble because people think they're Jewish and they're really not. And if in fact they are Jewish, their conversion is valid, and now they actually are obligated in the entire Torah, then you hurt them because now they're going to be liable for all the prohibitions that they are violating. You're not actually helping anybody. The Sri De'esh, Rav Chiel Yaakov Weinberg, said the same thing regarding converting a minor in a household where they're not observing mitzvot. He says all you're doing is causing a stumbling block. So we have three approaches to why Naomi wants to talk her out of it. Approach number one, She doesn't want them. They remind her of what happened to her sons, and she blames them for what happened to her sons. And maybe there would be an embarrassment. Approach number two, it's for their sake. She's concerned for their safety. Approach number three is the idea that she is concerned about their religious welfare and the religious welfare of the Jewish people if they are not sincere. So Megillas Rus teaches us many lessons. Some of these lessons are about our relations with non-Jews. In some sense, it's a lesson about distancing ourselves from them, like a message here that intermarriage can lead to destruction, taking the view that the marriage of Mahlon and Kilion to Rus and Orpah is in fact what leads to their demise. The Malbim I brought you in source number 18, but it's 227, so I'm not going to say it inside. But the Malbim also says there's a cultural misunderstanding between Ruth and Boaz about mixed gleaning. Because Boaz and Naomi both say to Ruth, you are going to glean with the ne'arot, with the girls. And Ruth keeps saying, im ha-ne'arim. Ruth keeps going to the ne'arim, to the guys. It's the Malbim in number 18. So there are lessons about distancing. Some of the lessons are about their goodness, because Rus and Arpa come across as good people, including in the last source, the Gemara in Sota, that talks about the tears that Arpa cries for her mother-in-law, and how that leads to four warriors who come from her, the Bnei Harapha, which we've talked about in Shmuel, not for right now, we talked about it in Shmuel in Perek Yud Zayin regarding Golias. So, you know, Rus and Orpah are good, seem to be good people, in this story. Naomi also teaches us what is an appropriate concern when it comes to our relationship with non-Jews, which is concern for their physical safety and concern for their religious well-being. And I think that that's something that we can really learn from, because our natural reaction to the fact that we live in such hostility toward Jews is to see our own pain and suffering, right? That's what we see. And so we build walls and we lash out. But Naomi, according to approaches 2 and 3, is turning them away not due to animosity, but just the opposite, because she cares for them and she doesn't want them to get hurt. So I think that's a powerful lesson that we're able to get from the Sefer. Not the normal thing that you see, but I think that it's very much there when you interact with the people around you, even the Moabite. Prioritize your assistance for them and make that your motivation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rabbi.